Tango Tango Papa 2046, January 15, 2020.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Corning, California. So it has been, I guess, about a month or so since the last podcast. As I recall, the last podcast I was in a motel in Waco, Texas. That was a kind of the middle of December, or somewhere in the middle of December. I'd actually have to, maybe on the 19th of December. I was on my way, my vacation had recently started. I was on my way to South Texas, which I made it down there and spent 8 nights down there, kind of hanging out with my parents. And then after that, I came back to Arkansas. Then my parents came a couple of days later because they had some business to take care of, and so they're actually in Arkansas right now. They'll be going back once they get their business done. They'll go back probably later this month. They'll go back to South Texas. So I came back to work on January the 4th. So I've been back since then. So today is the 15th. So I've been back a number of days. I'll be going back home again towards the end of the month. I have another dental cleaning appointment. I get my teeth cleaned every 3 months. So I could probably actually reduce the frequency of that at this point, because I've got the dental cleaning routine that I've kind of developed over the past couple of years has really stabilized my teeth and my gums, and so I could probably back that off, but I'm not going to suggest it necessarily. I just, you know, might chit-chat with one of the, you know, with one of them and ask them what they think about if I could maybe, instead of every 3 months, back it off to like every 4 months or something like that. So, but at least it is stable, that, you know, which that's really good news, that I was able to stabilize the, you know, the teeth and the gums. So, but as I say, it's been about a month since the last podcast. Of course, I've been, since I came back to work, I've been very busy. no surprise there. And as I say, right now I'm in Corning, California. I'll be picking a load up tomorrow afternoon at Oakland. And that's a shorter load. It delivers to Southgate, California, which that's down in Los Angeles County. So that's a kind of a, I'll put it, it's less than 400 miles. Let's say 300 and, without looking, you know, like 350 or 375 or something like that. Probably a little less than that, but it is over 300. So might be 3 1/4, who knows. But that goes to there, and then, you know, but I am kind of running low on hours at this point, so I've kind of that's what happens. So anyway, I have a couple of Voxer files from Joel. The first one he sent it right after I had published the previous podcast, back in December, he sent that, and then, you know, I had maybe intended while I was home to, on my vacation, to do a podcast, but then, I never did get around to it. And so then he sent another voice file today, and so, that kind of prompted me to go ahead and record a podcast. I've been very busy, and today's actually the first day where it's, because I sort of ran out of time, or was running out of time, today was, the first day where I've really been able to just take the time and record a podcast. I've kind of had the past several days, I've had partially night turned into day and day turned into night, and so that always makes it more difficult to do anything like record a podcast. So anyway, so what should we do? Should I start with the voice files from Joel, or well, yeah, that's what we're gonna do. I don't ever really plan for these podcasts that much. It'd probably be better if I did, but sometimes I just like to be a little bit more spontaneous. So, I'm not one that makes lots and lots of plans, although plans have their place. But, I also really believe that being able to be spontaneous is also actually quite useful. So anyway, so let's go ahead and start listening to Joel. So here is Joel.
Hey Tom, Joel McLaughlin. Just listened to your last, what you did after the impeachment vote. And it's very, I won't say disconcerting, the vote. It's very much not a surprise. It's something you've been trying to do since before he was an actual candidate. Because of various reasons. I'm not exactly sure all the reasons, of course. But, them's the breaks. It's the Democrats. It's not, like I said, not a surprise. What a lot of people seem to forget is that this is their MO. This is how the Democrats have been doing business for years. Okay? They have been constantly doing this kind of crap, labeling people as worse than they are, in fact, as, pretty much exactly how they are, all right? But, that's not unsurprising. Now, what's funny, though, is Pelosi seems to be sticking her foot in it even deeper with things like saying things like, oh, we're not going to send, we're going to delay sending these to the Senate. It's like, okay, fine. He stays in office. I don't care. Okay. But, she doesn't realize that she sends it there. The things that they've asked or they accused him of doing really aren't a thing. I don't know. I don't get it. I don't get it. And they'll say things like, oh, this will, even if he does win a really election, this will put an asterisk on the Trump presidency. Is there an asterisk on Bill Clinton's presidency? Does anybody even talk about the Monica Lewinsky thing? At least on the Democrat side? No. Every once in a while I get Republicans bringing it up, but generally people think what they're going to think about Bill, and we already know some things to think with him. But, in any event, it's a sad time in our society. And the Democrats always say, this is bad for democracy, and you keep having to remind Democrats that We're not in a democracy. We're in a constitutional republic. And yes, there is a difference. There are pieces of democracy in it, but it's not democratic. You know, I think there's going to be things that are going to hit the fan with them. And I think they're starting to realize that too. So, any event, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. And we'll see you next year. Bless you. Record another show in the next week.
Thank you, Joel. That was Joel's first comment. I think what Nancy Pelosi, you know, had planned was, you know, with the benefit of hindsight now that it's been about a month, I think what she planned, and it's a lot of people are now mentioning it, she wanted to delay the, you know, sending, you know, supposedly sending those over to the Senate. She wanted to delay that so that it would kind of stretch it out into the State of the Union and, you know, kind of push it on out. Now, I'm not following every little thing that happens. You know, I've got certain videos that I occasionally watch on YouTube that, you know, where these people are kind of finding, you know, one of them, the name of the, you just search Black Conservative Patriot. I, you know, that guy is, he's in Southern California. And he's going through the news and kind of putting a video up every single day of what he thinks is most relevant and better him to, you know, kind of going through all that news and, you know, kind of sifting through it than me, because I'm just not going to do it. So I watch most of his videos, and there's some other ones that I'll watch as well. And that's how I kind of stay up on this stuff. But otherwise, I, you know, turn it off. You know, because it's 99% of what's on, it seems to me, what's on the so-called mainstream media is propaganda. And it's just designed to manipulate your behavior, manipulate your thinking, manipulate your attitude, et cetera, et cetera. It's worse than it's ever been. So, but in any case, this is, I don't know. On the one hand, it's unpleasant what's happening, what's going on. But on the other hand, I think it's a necessary process. And why do I say it's a necessary process? It's necessary for, you know, if you think of it in terms of, you know, like baking a cake, for example, you've got to, you know, you can't take the cake out of the oven too soon. If you leave it in too long, then that's going to create a problem. But, you know, not that I eat cake anymore. But, you know, if you take it out too soon, then it's not done. It's not ready. So I think what's happening, or you could think of it in terms of a chemical process, you have to time the chemical process, or, you know, the ingredients have to sort of separate or whatever. You know, let's say that you have a catalyst that you add, and then the stuff has to separate or something like that, something along those lines. So what's happening, people are becoming, even the people that have not been paying attention are really starting to come around. You've got a lot of the Democrats and the so-called walkaway movement, where they're leaving the Democrat Party in droves. I saw one statistic, or I heard it somewhere, where one of the recent Trump rallies, they said 42% of the people that were there were, you know, I guess that they had sampled, were actually former Democrats, which that's really encouraging. And, of course, you see the pictures of the Trump rallies, and they're just, you know, they're more stuffed with people than ever. And So I think it's necessary for the maximum number of people to be able to see, you know, and really, really see what, you know, how deceptive these, you know, certain people are, and really see for themselves that a lot of the ideas that they, you know, that they just sort of casually, you know, sort of casually didn't think about, but they thought that they, oh, well, I like socialism, or I like this, or I like that, or I want the government to take care of me, or I think the government should take care of everyone, or people have these general, you know, these vague ideas that, you know, at some point they have to realize that those are ridiculous. And so you need to find out what the extreme, you know, you push these people to the very edge, to the very extreme, and that includes the Democrats themselves. They're actually showing who they are. You know, there was a thing I saw yesterday, you know, that one of the Bernie Sanders supporter was saying that, it may have been one of the people working for his campaign. He was saying, well, if Bernie wins, we need to have put the conservative people in gulags and re-educate them. And they really think that. So, but why would they say that? You know, because they're pushed to the edge. They're really coming, they have to, you know, you put people in the right circumstance and they have to be honest. You know, they will, in spite of themselves. You know, they can't, they won't, they'll, all of a sudden they'll reveal themselves for who they are. If you that's true in a group like this, and it's true individually. If you can remain calm, and that's the key, when you're dealing with someone, whether it's a friend or a relative, particularly if it's a relative, if you remain calm and as you're dealing with them, then they'll show who they are sooner. They get frustrated, and then they just, despite themselves, they can't help themselves, they show who they are. You see who they, what their real identity is. And by the way, you show who you are by remaining calm. You know, you show who you are by remaining calm, and then they have to show who they are. And, of course, they become more and more upset. They're more and more, and they're more insane, and everybody's seeing it now. I've been saying that for the longest time, that they're, that these people are going insane, and it's getting to the point where everybody's saying it now. So everybody is able to see it. And so this, you know, I don't know what's going to happen in the Senate. You know, if they're going to do the trial or not. I guess that was, as far as I know, that was still up in the air. You know, there's arguments on both sides. One of the arguments is, well, the charges are bogus, so therefore they shouldn't, the Senate shouldn't take it up. They should simply dismiss it because it's bogus charges. But I think, you know, and then the argument on the other hand is that, or, you know, and then if the with the bogus charges, then future presidents would have, you know, would have to face that every month. But the argument on the other side is, you know, let's have a real trial and really drag the accusers through the mud in the Senate, via the Senate process. And I think that that's really what should be done. Let's go ahead and have a trial, and let's just drag these people right through the mud and hold their feet to the fire, make Joe Biden testify, make Hunter Biden testify, make, you know, bring all of these people in that, you know, in the deep, so-called deep state that, brought about all this fraudulent stuff, you know, and tried to do a coup on a duly elected president. You know, let's hold those people, you know, expose that, and, you know, and it's going to be, you know, make no mistake about it, it's going to have, you know, if there's an impeachment trial, it's not only going to play big in the United States, it's going to play big around the world. There's going to be millions and millions and millions of people watching that. So I think that's more of a, you know, let's go ahead and have a big trial, make it as big as possible, with you know, with all the witnesses and what have you, and really, you know, it's like going to be like a thermonuclear bomb, and, you know, destroy the Democrat Party once and for all. Of course, they've destroyed themselves, along with, there's bad people in the Republican Party. It's not just Democrats. So there, you know, as I've said for the longest time now, I still think, I know a lot of people are skeptical, but I still believe that eventually justice is going to happen. The wheels of justice at the federal level move very, you know, kind of excruciatingly slowly. And but I think that many of these people are going to end up in jail or whatever. But, you know, it's, they're all about PR, and, you know, and there are certain people that, I don't know, that watch that stuff, you know, and I'm noticing more and more and more people are, that they're just ignoring it, because they know it's propaganda. And they be, the one of the things that's happened as a result of this is that more and more people are becoming immune to the propaganda. People are actually kind of develop, you can think of it in terms of an immune system. People are actually developing an immunity to the propaganda machine, and which is a very interesting thing that's happening. So, but the best thing to do, you know, I think, you know, as I say, I'm optimistic about what the outcome, because I trust Donald Trump. I believe in Donald Trump, but, you know, he's not perfect, but boy, he's pretty good, you know, and he's got, and he has, you know, I do believe that Trump has pure intentions, and that's really what matters. Is, and that's what, one of the reasons why he wins every time, you know. And these people just, they keep trying to take him out, and they just keep damaging themselves, and then they get more frustrated, and, you know, and you just you know, rinse and repeat over and over again. They keep losing, and they get more frustrated, and they do something even more stupid, and you know, they're doing themselves in. So I think the Democrat Party is toast. So we'll see what happens. I might be wrong, but we'll see what happens. But in the meantime, I'm very optimistic. And I'm not sort of immersing myself in all this minutia, all the, you know, the day-to-day, oh, this happened, and so-and-so said this, and so-and-so said that, and... you know, I'm not, I don't, you know, I don't really care about all that stuff. At the end of the day, it's not going to matter. Because I really do believe that these, that there are going to be people that go to jail. Big names, you know, big named people are going to go to jail. The Democrat Party is probably going to, you know, just completely destroy itself, utterly obliterate itself, and a large part of the corruption that has been going on in the U.S. is going to, you know, it's, we're not going to get rid of all of it, but I think we're going to get rid of a good chunk of it. A really healthy chunk of it is, we're going to be able to deal with. You know, and of course, the problem is that corruption doesn't happen just at the top of the society. Corruption happens at every level of society. And so when you see corruption happening at kind of the federal level of the government, you can rest assured that it's also, you know, kind of happening down at the bottom as well, you know, and a certain number of people, just everyday people, are responsible for the, you know, the corruption simply scales up. And I've said that for quite some time. You know, our general level of morality, you know, just in the general society, really does end up having an effect on the, you know, at the top, you know, on the federal level. So we all need to kind of clean up our act. It's not just, well, it's just, you know, at the top level and that's the problem. No, all of us need to think about the difference between right and wrong. All of us, even, you know, individually, we need to think about, you know, our own we need to be honest with ourselves about, you know, instead of just saying, oh, I'm a good person, and, you know, kind of falsifying what we think about ourselves. You know, we're telling ourselves, oh, I'm a good person, and then you eat the cupcake or whatever, or eat the ice cream cone. Instead of doing that, you know, we need to face, you know, really look at ourselves, because we think, you know, we like to think, oh, it's everybody else. Everybody else is corrupt. It's not me, not my problem. Well, yeah, it is. It kind of is. And so we need to all face that. And I think that probably a lot of people are, because when you're faced with the level of propaganda, you know, part of the, you know, people becoming immune to the propaganda, part of that revolves around, if you want to become immune to the propaganda or to any kind of propaganda, it requires you to honestly look at yourself. You know, you need to be able to look at yourself. One of the things that's, it's interesting, you know, what control, you know, why would people fight, you know, get to the point where they're willing to kill each other because they have a difference of opinion? Now, what is that about? And what that's about, it revolves, you know, people have a sense of sort of right and wrong, and, you know, so that's based on your perceptions, you know, kind of how you see the world. And if your perceptions are sort of pathologized, in other words, that you're not looking at the world right, you know, and of course we all don't look at the world in the same way. There's about five big, so-called big personality traits that sort of govern all of us, and you know, those are largely, you know, you may or may not be able to sort of manipulate those, but within yourself, but those are largely just kind of fixed. I'm convinced that what kind of messes those up, what pathologizes those personality traits, is resentment. Resentment causes us ultimately to see, if we won't look at it, it causes us to see the world backwards. Right becomes wrong, wrong becomes right. And then when you see somebody that, especially you, if you're wrong and you're looking at the world backwards, you think abortion's a great thing, for example. You think you like socialism. You think that way, and you think, well, how could anybody think any other way? You know, the person that thinks another way is a threat. You know, let's send them to the gulag or kill them. You know, you're pathologized. You know, so they see, you know, just the existence of someone that doesn't, you know, that thinks that abortion is murder, for example, just that is a threat, because it's threatening the way people see the world. You know, it's threatening the sort of the house of card lies that they've based their perceptions around. So, but the fact that people are able to, you know, more and more people are able to see through the propaganda, that tells me that they've been, to some extent or other, looking at themselves, looking at, you know, kind of examining their own sense of right and wrong, examining their own perceptions, and then they can then they're able to see, that's propaganda. That's not just it's not just a lie that, or you know, that I pretend is the truth that I use to make me feel good about myself. Now, there are still people that do that, of course, but the number of people that are doing that is shrinking. And, you know, for example, how many people watch, you know, liberals, for example, let's just pick something out of the air, how many liberals are watching Rachel Maddow and, you know, in order to sort of reinforce the idea that abortion is good, it's a noble thing to kill your baby. It's really a noble thing to kill your baby because there's too many people in the world anyway. That kind of thing. How many people are actually doing that? Well, the number of people that are actually watching those shows is shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. And it's because people can't, they get to the point where they just can't, it doesn't work anymore. They can't stand it. So I think it's, we do have to go through this process. And it's kind of dangerous. Of course, it's a little dangerous. But I, you know, ultimately, we are in the experiment. We're not in control of it. We like to think we're in control of it. We're not. Sorry. We're not in control of the experiment. We're in it. And so I think it's, you know, it's the, as far as right now, the experiment's going to continue. And I don't think the United States is going to end up as Venezuela. As if we were going to, we already would have. You know, it's hard to say how many decent people there are in America, but there are a lot. You know, but you're never going to hear about it in the, you know, in the propaganda media. By the way, I just discovered that Joel's second Voxer file was corrupted, and so it starts. The file actually, this is the first time I've ever seen this, the file actually starts playing like after a minute, after he's already talked a minute or two. And so I even deleted it off of my phone and re-logged in back into Voxer, and it still comes up the same way. So I'm still using Voxer with at least one or two people. But I've also been moving away from it. There's a better program, actually, called Telegram X that actually has way better recording capability. You know, the files are much, much better quality. And I'm not getting any kind of fragmented files like I occasionally do with Voxer. But anyway, here is Joel.
Rightly so, the liberals and the Democrats, or the socialists, or any, whatever you want to call them, did say that Star Trek has always been progressive, and this has been true. You know, Star Trek was one of the shows to have the first interracial kiss with Uhura and Kirk. So. And I think conservatives who are fans of the show watch it and they know this. Okay, they're not stupid. Okay, but progressive then, progressive for Roddenberry, isn't the same as it is today. And this is where the leftists and the Democrats or the progressives or whatever, like I said, whatever you want to call them, where they mess up in this kind of debate. Is that they don't realize that they've gone way the other direction. So it's not just trying to promote their progressive attitude and their progressive ways of things. They basically became authoritarian. They don't see themselves in this way. And you know, they want to force the rest of people to believe that way. And if in from watching Star Trek, if you watch some of this, some anything pretty much before Discovery, it did address those things, but it also did it in a respectful way. I mean, there was, you know, and not to mention the fact, actually, another conservative brought this out. An axiom that Spock used, especially in Star Trek III and Star Trek IV, where he said the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one. Okay, and they kind of addressed it in both ways. In most cases in Star Trek, they go with the needs of the many. All right. There's one exception, and there's always exceptions, and that was when in Star Trek III they want to go save Spock, okay? So, Star Trek may have been progressive, but it also did it in a nuanced way that was respectful. Today, I don't see progressives. I don't really like to call them progressive anymore because they're regressing. All right. Back when I was growing up, one of the ones that were the most strict were actually conservatives and Christians. Now it's quite literally flip-flopped. Christians, at least Christians like myself, we believe that people know they're sinners and know that they're screwing up, okay? But we love them anyway. I don't necessarily see that against with liberals. And I know you're gonna say you will shut them out. Yeah, then that's okay. This is not making me upset at all. It's just something interesting that I'm noticing. You know, I want to read that other side so I know how to debate them. So that, and I don't necessarily debate them with the idea that I want to change what they think, because I can't really change what they think if they're that hard. But I can at least understand them. And that's where it helps me. Trying to understand that they have no point most of the time. Most of the time they have a view and they have their view and they don't know why they have their view. So, anyway, I'm here day three heading to Planet Fitness, and I went 5 days last week, and this is day three, and my intention is to go 5 this week. So and I have to do this for myself, you know. The diet is part of it, of course. I'm not as hardcore against carbs as you are, for sure, and that's fine. I just can't do the keto stuff. It just, so you know I can't just eat meat all the time. It's not something, meat and veggies, you know, it's not really something I'd enjoy all that much. I do reduce carbs, but I do still have them. So, hey, man, hopefully you're doing well. Talk to you later.
Thanks again, Joel. So we heard enough of that file where he's talking about Star Trek, and you know, Star Trek being progressive or liberal, and yeah, it certainly was. But if you go back to the original Star Trek, you know, the one that was that I watched, you know, I remember watching that when it was actually on NBC. It aired in the, it was on for 3 years. It aired in the late 1960s. And, you know, you watch those episodes today, and most of those episodes hold up pretty well. You know, now if you look at it in terms of, well, the visuals and the special effects and all that, yeah, it's pretty dated looking. But, you know, it's interesting, you know, we're able to kind of suspend disbelief and watch something like that, and actually enjoy it, not because of the visuals or the dated special effects or whatever, but because the acting and the writing was so good. And yeah, they had the first interracial kiss. Well, what was so, you know, it was shocking about that? Is it always conservative? You know, it's always portrayed that conservatives are against mixing of the races and all that. And it's, I would contend, it's actually the other way around. The original KKK, if you, you know, and before that, you go back, they were not Republicans, they were Democrats. They were not Republicans, they were Democrats. So they are the people that are actually the racists. They're the ones, the people on the left are the ones that are always bringing race up. They can't ever just really, you know, that you talk about a colorblind society. They can't do it. They, you know, they, and then they come up with all kinds, you point that out to them and they'll come up with all kinds of excuses as to why we can't be colorblind and we've got to try to have reverse racism in order to counteract the racism that already happened. Well, you know, that argument, you're always putting somebody down, you know, raising someone else and putting them someone down at someone else's expense, you're always going to have a conflict. That's the problem. What we have to do is just let go of that. Just let go of whatever the idea is, you know, whatever the, you know, whatever it is that, you know, that you're resentful about. If you could just let go of that, then if we could, most of us would do that, then it would, we could just live and let live. But, you know, the interracial kiss, that wasn't such a big deal. You know, because otherwise, if you look at Star Trek, was a morality play. The original, all those original episodes, and even many of the Next Generation episodes, are morality plays. Now, sometimes they got it wrong. Sometimes they, especially in the Next Generation, you know, they at first, if you watch the first couple of seasons of Star Trek: Next Generation. You know, the John, you know, even at that point, the Jean-Luc Picard character was kind of weak and wimpy, and then it wasn't going, you know, the thing didn't have the, you know, they wanted to improve the ratings, so they made him more of a, you know, more like the William Shatner character somewhat, you know, and then but you know, the original series was basically, and it wasn't perfect, but it was a morality play. Now, am I was I shocked when there was the interracial kiss? No. Were a lot of people shocked? I don't think so. Now, there were some people, you know, that a number of years ago, you'd go down into the South when it was still kind of a Democrat place, and if you'd see like an interracial couple in a restaurant, you know, I think some people maybe thought that that was shocking, but and even then, it was probably, you know, the first time I saw it, you know, like I was in the South, and this has been years and years ago, and I was in a Waffle House type place, and there was an interracial couple that came in, and I thought, whoa, oh boy, these people are going to get stared at or whatever, and people were ignoring them. And this has been quite a few years ago, so part of it was in my own mind, this idea was built up that, boy, these people are in the South, and they're going to get tarred and feathered and ran out of here just because, you know, they're not going to allow it. Well, that wasn't true. Nowadays you see that kind of stuff all the time, and no, but who cares? I don't care. Whatever. So I don't think conservatives really care about that. I think it's all along, it's been the liberals that care. You know, the people on that side of the equation are the ones that say that they don't care, but they really do, because they're the ones that are keep bringing it up all the time. They keep bringing race up all the time, for example. So, you know, I don't know how much, I'm sure you've listened to some of the, you know, maybe a lot of the Jordan Peterson lectures, but he likes to, you know, one of the things he talks about is, you know, kind of the left and the right and the function that they serve in society, you know, and, you know, the conservatives, you can kind of think of people that are, you know, like more of the traditional conservatives, you know, and then the people that are more open, you know, to new experiences and what have you, being more liberal. Well, you know, if you have a society that is just too stodgy and, you know, it's kind of too trapped in their traditions and what have you, that can be, you know, that's not a good thing, because, you know, conditions can kind of change, and of course conditions always change. The one thing that always gets better, knowledge improves, and so things may have to change, and so that you have the people on the other side that are more open to change, you know, new ways of doing things, etc., etc., you know, and so you need those two people to argue all the time, and that's where freedom of speech comes in, because then you can kind of calmly argue back and forth and hopefully come to the, you know, the purpose of a real discussion is to come to the truth and not just have an argument for argument's sake. But where that becomes pathologized is too, you know, is via resentment. And you have the resentful person on the right and the resentful person on the left, and nowhere will they meet in the middle. They can't do it. And as I said before, if you're resentful, whether you're aware of it or not, it really tinges the way that you perceive the world. It ruins your ability to see the real difference between right and wrong, what's important and what's not so important. And if your identity ends up being externalized, because resentment causes you, ultimately, it causes you to end up with an externalized identity. What ends up happening if your identity is externalized, this is another way of saying it, if your identity is sort of based on external things around you, then anything that threatens those things threatens your very identity. And so, you know, people, you know, people can end up living in fantasies, you know, and they're living in, you know, in the fantasy world, and the whole fantasy is always threatening to shatter. But the one thing that never really changes, of course, you know, knowledge always improves. Technical knowledge always improves. Communications is always improving. The one thing that never changes is human nature. And human nature can't progress. It can only regress. You know, if you plot it out, it goes up and down. Over time, it sort of goes up and down like a sine wave, as I've said many times. So human nature is not, you know, is not progressing. It regresses. It can, you know, maybe it can, you know, you kind of go back to what it should be, But then it's always, if it does, then it's always in danger of deteriorating again. And that's really the only, that's all that happens. If we could actually go back to biblical times, the same thing was happening. Obviously the technology, the knowledge wasn't there that we have today, but morally, socially, it was all exactly the same type of stuff that was going on. People gossiping about each other, cheating on each other, lying, cheat, steal, murder, rape, etc., etc. Those things have been around as long as people have been around. And you always have people that they want to force everyone to see the world the way they do, because they're disconnected from their creator. If you're really connected to your creator, then you're not threatened by people that, to the extent, I'm not threatened by people that don't see the world the way I do. At least to the extent, I don't want to live in a completely pathologized society. Or I don't want to live in a society where I end up having, get sent to the gulag because I don't think right. But I'm personally not threatened by someone that, wrong is right, right is wrong. They're seeing the world backwards. I'd like to, I love to help people. But the problem is people don't want help. That took me a long time to realize that there's a lot of people that really don't want it. They complain and they moan and they groan about how tough their existence is and how rotten it is, and they're unhappy and blah, 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 blah. And what I have found is that the vast majority of the time, you offer someone like that real, advice that would actually help them, and they reject it. They don't want it. So with the, getting back to the Star Trek thing, with the later, especially with this Voyager, or not, is it Discovery? The Star Trek Discovery, they're really trying to use that to reprogram. They think that they're going to reprogram people with, with all the, the social justice warrior crap. They really believe that the people that run all these shows and write the shows, they really think that they can reprogram everybody to sort of think, the way they want them to, and they think that they're going to end up with, program utopia, re-educate everybody, especially from a young age, that, all of the basic things, rob, rape, murder, steal, etc., to make it extreme, that those are all okay. It's just there is no right and wrong. Everything's a shade of gray. That's what they're trying to reprogram everyone to think. Or especially future generations is what they're, that's what they've been concentrating on, especially via the school system. And all they've really done is just throw a monkey wrench and, cause the maximum number of people to end up dysfunctionalized. And if someone comes along and they trip you up morally, shame on them. But once you're, if you, you know, then you get to a certain point, even if you're tripped up morally, and we all are to a large extent, you know, we've not been raised in a perfect, none of us have been raised in a perfect environment. Besides that, we all have, you know, we have all got our character flaws as well. You have to mature at some point and just realize it's not been perfect. Let it go. Stop resenting your parents. Stop resenting this and that. Just let go of that. And realize that you're not God. You're not going to be able to judge, you know, judge all these things kind of create justice, you know, kind of emanating from your mind. It's not going to happen. It's actually exactly the opposite. You have to let the, if you can let that stuff go and actually mature, if you can let that stuff go, you can actually, to the degree that you're able to let that go, you can actually find your creator. Listen to your creator. Our creator is actually right, you know, right here, right now, behind everything, behind our awareness, behind, you know, it's the very thing that brings us into existence, the very thing that sustains the, you know, that sustains our existence, the very thing that sustains the existence of matter. But of course, we've been given a choice. The choice is, and of course the temptation is to be God, or to try to be God, to imagine that we're God, when in fact we're not. Or to stop doing that and to then, you know, kind of allow the creation to you know, to kind of create, you know, to kind of allow it, a creation to sort of unfold like a flower. Without us interfering, without us messing with it. It's very difficult. It's a simple, a super, super simple concept. And it's difficult. I'm not doing a very good job of getting the concept across. But if you can imagine that, you know, God is at the very center of what not only sustains, creates and sustains the matter that's around us, the matter that makes up our bodies, but also has endowed us with awareness, and then that allows us, if we can get our own, the wrong side of our own egos out of the way, that allows us to unfold, and, you know, kind of like a flower unfolds, that allows our awareness to unfold, sort of like, you know, akin to a flower unfolding, kind of on a like a never-ending basis. But of course, the problem is that we interfere with that. But we've been given that choice. And we have to, you know, that's part of what this world is about. It's sort of like a halfway house between heaven and hell. And it's up to us to either kind of go to hell or realize what's going on and actually search for the truth. And if you actually search for the truth, you can find it. But as I said before, a lot of people think, you know, they may claim they're searching for the truth, but they're really, when it comes right down to it, they're not. So Star Trek was popular, especially the original series. The reason that was so popular is because those were morality plays about, you know, sort of, you could think of archetypal stories about right and wrong. They didn't get it right all the time, but they did, to a large extent, they got it right. And that's why those episodes resonated so well. You know, and in later things, they, you know, maybe they, you know, like in the Next Generation, Star Trek Next Generation, they had, you know, it wasn't perfect either, but they had a lot of good episodes and a lot, and it was still, to a large extent, a morality play. But the thing about a morality play, you know, it can either, you either get the morality play right, or you try to interject and you know, make it wrong. You know, make the morale, you know, kind of make the morals not really work the way they do in the real world. And those kind of things don't work so well. Those sorts of stories are usually quickly forgotten. You know, so, but anyway, Star Trek, you know, Gene Roddenberry, I was actually in the past few days, I was listening to something, you know, some people talk about Gene Roddenberry. Let's see, Robert Justman, there's another guy. His last name was Solo, S-O-L-O. I don't remember his first name, but they were around with Gene Roddenberry during the creation of the first three seasons before the original show got canceled. And Gene Roddenberry took credit for a lot of the things with Star Trek, but the truth is that there were a lot of things that the people that were around him that were helping him create that show, they came up with the ideas. And he was really good at taking credit for it. So, yeah, he, you know, some of the things, yeah, he really did come up with a, you know, kind of a unique concept, but part of it, you know, the people around him really contributed to that. You know, and of course people have a tendency to want to almost worship Gene Roddenberry. You know, whereas he was kind of he had his character flaws, no question about it. So, you know, the idea that people want to know about this and know about that, I think what you have to do is just, you know, kind of take the episodes that we have, you know, like those or whatever it is, and it could be Star Trek or it could be Star Wars or it could be any number of entertaining stories like that, and they either get the morality play right, where it sort of resonates with something within us, you know, with our conscience. It either resonates with us or it doesn't. And if you can put, you know, you take something like a morality play and you put it in context of, it's this weird science fiction world or kind of a fantasy world, that makes it, kind of makes it more acceptable. But at the end of the day, the really popular, you know, like Star Wars, the original Star Wars, for example, the reason it was so popular is because that's really a kind of an archetypical story about right and wrong. And those sorts of stories, you know, our morality, as I've explained it before, you know, we have this, it's kind of a latent sense of right and wrong, meaning latent, meaning that it's not dominant. It's not like an instinct that we must follow. We can go against the so-called still small voice. Of course, to our peril. But we're here, we've been given time to find out where the wrong path leads. And hopefully we can mature and find out, you know, and follow the right path, come back to the right path. And that's not an easy thing to do, and it's right in the Bible. What does it say? Narrow is the way, fewer those that find it. What does that mean? Pareto distribution. I've talked about Pareto distribution before. It's like the square root. You take the square root of the, you divide the whole thing in half, and you know, just then the square root of the first half, and those are the people that are at the top. So, so the top people end up with all the money and all the, you know, or, you know, any creative endeavor. You know, a little tiny percentage of people end up at the top. And I think that that's basically, it's also, monetarily, it's also been called the Matthew Principle. But it's on a Pareto distribution. Narrow is the way, fewer those that find it. And the reason is, I'm convinced people don't want to find it. They want the lie. They want, they're in love with the lie. They're in love, you know, they want to believe that they're God, etc., etc. It's kind of sad, but that's the way it is. That's the world we find ourselves in. So, anyhow, probably better be cutting this off. Hope everyone is having a great week, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.